C1PR Number 17B.
Well, it's nice to know that. I think it's super important to know that. Because each one of us has a feeling, how can I grow spiritually? Each one of us thinks, has the desire to grow spiritually. And so often we hear somebody saying, but how can I grow spiritually? How can I make progress spiritually? Well, here is the law. It says, you can't start by wishing progress. No, you must start by the first prayer. First, to have a right concept of God. Seek the right concept of God. Then that brings you a bigger vision. Second, if you go and live and love that vision, and worship that vision, and put that vision first into your affection, into your life, and first in everything, and give it its proper place and its foremost place, that is going to unfold something in you. It does it by itself. Spirit unfolds. We don't unfold it. But we must touch the law of spirit which impels that law and that unfoldment. So we get a wonderful law in its consistency and in its coherency. Then we went to the third prayer, the prayer of soul, where Mrs. Eddy says right at the beginning that sorrow for wrongdoing is not enough, that something more is needed. The next and great step required by wisdom is the test of our sincerity, namely reformation. Test. The test. Now comes the test of it is reformation. But how do I get reformation? And she says, well, the way to get reformation is through the test of sincerity. The test of sincerity. And through the whole first subject, we had all those tests of sincerity. She was saying, well, are we willing to pay the uttermost price which is asked? You see, our sincerity is tested. Or she says, are we willing to rebuke sin? We are tested, so our sincerity is tested. Or she says, are we willing to destroy all evil work or only a part of it? Our true genuineness and integrity and sincerity is tested, you see. The third is quite different again than the second. It is that sense where I must express to a certain extent the sinlessness of soul. Here in the first chapter it's only of that sincerity of being willing. I stress of being willing to rebuke sin, being willing to go the way, of being willing to pay the price, of being willing not to go around the order, not to sidestep the order of the first and second prayer, where I'm willing not to fool myself into thinking there is another way of getting at the end than going through the first and second stage. It is a great test in the third always not to fool myself that there is another prayer. Clarity lies in it that I'm willing to hold fast, to stick to. You get that toughness and that strictness of soul to hold fast, to stick to the first prayer and to the second prayer. See, to stick to the first prayer and to the second prayer, that's the third prayer, that's the sticking to it. The being genuine about it, sincere about it. And so, it is a test. See, that's why here she brings in the testing of it. She says, temptation bids you to repeat the offense. Here, it's the snake that comes in. And the third prayer is that wonderful prayer of that integrity of soul, where we have to stick to the order which has been shown, and where we don't speculate with God about our prayers. We get quite a definite sense that there is no, that we shouldn't speculate with God, that the law is set down in the first and second prayer, and that as the third step it is asked to stick to that law and not to speculate on any other way. Wonderful prayer, a tough prayer. And it is also pointing out that we must be willing not only to rebuke human sin, but also all that which tries to ape spiritual sense, like emotionalism, ecstasy, elevation of thought, and so on, which tries to hitch his wagon to the stars without sound foundation. With emotionalism, ecstasy, elevation of thought, and whatever, you remember the whole list of sentiments which is not grounded on the first prayer and the second prayer, and therefore which he calls, that doesn't generate a Christian sentiment. So here we got the third law, so to say, of prayer, where we say, now, what do we give to God in our prayer? And it says, I have to give my whole sincerity to it. My sincerity, my integrity. What sincerity? The sincerity of keeping the first prayer, of keeping the second prayer, and keeping it immune, keeping it tight, not letting in any other suggestion. Then what happens? Well, what happens, he says, I get reformed. That brings reformation. That's the law which is embosomed in soul, which we haven't made, which we can't generate. The law embosomed in soul which says, if there is sincerity, if there is that sense of rebuking sin, of willingness to rebuking sin, of not letting in anything else but the first and second prayer, then that changes the man. That brings reformation. Very important law. Because I think every one of us would like to be reformed. Every one of us. And we say, yes, I want to be reformed. Well, but how? I always ask, but how? Well, it's not enough to tell me, well, soul reform. I say, yes, that may be true, but what is soul? Is soul S-O-U-L, or what is it? It must be something. Well, the third prayer comes and tells you, I tell you what reforms you. I tell you what it is. And it says, you know, if you stick to the first prayer, and if your whole heart and loving thought goes out to God and seek God as He is, you get a wonderful promise. The promise of the wholeness and lovingness and fullness and rightness of God. And if you go on to the second prayer and worship that promise, and worship it not just by thinking it, but by striving for it, by expressing our best spiritual qualities in attaining and nurturing and welcoming it, then that makes to grow something in us. Namely, the spiritual birth is going to happen within us. And naturally, the more we stick to that, naturally, the more we entertain that promise in us, the divine being must be reflected by men, the more we entertain that in us, and our whole mind and heart and love and feeling and intellect and everything is given to that new vision, naturally that has the power, you see, to rebuke in us what is not of the nature of God. And so it rebukes and out of us, quite naturally, lovingly, what does not belong to that vision and to that love. And so quite naturally, always something more from our sinful concept is ousted out. And we are new men, another man, a changed man. That is reformation. Now, so the law, you see, which she shows here is, what do I pray? And she says, give something to God. In the third, she says, what do you give? Give your sincerity to it. And what do I get from God as the answer? As the answer, I get the reformation. I get the gradual, gentle, loving reformation. It isn't the reformation which is through moral effort, which is through asceticism. You say, when you are an ascete, well, you know what I mean. You see, it's not something forced, it's something gentle. It's the outcome of a birth. The third can never stand alone. It is always the outcome of the first and second. So if you want to have the third happen gently, lovingly, naturally, we have to go to the one and to the two. And that does really impel the law of the days of creation. I was speaking yesterday and today with a few students, and funny enough, the same question came up, quite detached from what we are doing now, and which interested me because it just touches this point of seeing that the third must be the effect or the outcome of the first and second. For instance, the question which we were discussing could be summarized perhaps in this. How do I know when a thought comes to me if it is of the nature of idea or if it is of the nature of a human thought? I think that question is being put to you time and time again, that you say, well, how do you know if a thought comes to me that it is a divine idea, and how do I know that it isn't a divine idea, that it may be just one of my thoughts? Well, the answer which I feel the days of creation and the chapter on prayer give is quite definite. Namely, the answer is this, that if one asks, now, if now this idea this thought that has come to me a divine idea or not, then I think we can say it isn't a divine idea. Because you ask, you question, you query. You see? It is an incertitude in oneself which asks. Divine idea, when you read through the first volume of Mr. Dorlier and so on, he always shows so nice, and the days of creation show that an idea, that the thought, the waters, become of the definite nature as idea in the third day. Why? Because of what we have seen through the three stages of prayer. That when something is being born through the first and second prayer, that it reforms me. That it comes to me in the way of definiteness and in the way of a new definiteness, and not as something vague. Soul is always definite. As long as something is not definite and a questioning something is being indefinite about it, being uncertain about it, see all that's counterfeit of soul, then I know it hasn't grown to the point of soul. Because when something has grown through mind, through seeking, where I get a vision of a new impulsion of mind, then it is not yet definite in me, the vision. But when I go further and worship it, and worship it, and worship it, then it begins to grow in me, and the spiritual qualities begin to grow in me, and as they grow in me, there comes a point where it out the counterfeit. And then the definiteness, an idea is always definite, the definiteness of that thought as idea stands in me, and I know that I know. Then I'm sure that I'm sure. Then I not even have the question, is it an idea or isn't it an idea? Now, let's see, this is one of the most important points in this line of the chapter on prayer. Let's take that whole question of the three first prayers again, or this question of what is a definite idea. And let it see again from another point of view. So often somebody may tell me something metaphysical. And I listen to him and I may say, oh yes, that's clear as daylight. You may have said that too. Now, what has happened in me? In me has happened the point of mind as soul, but not more. It isn't soul. It isn't soul as mind, nor as soul as spirit, nor as soul as soul. I say quite clearly, oh yes, that's clear as daylight. Mind as soul in the first day of creation. See, where the day is defined. To me, it isn't yet what it is to the one who has talked to me. It is only a light that has come to me. But in order that it is in me, firm foundation, dry ground, that it is me, that it is my own me, my own self, for that I have to take that vision which is clear as daylight and say, oh, wonderful. I have to take it in first, and I have to love it, and I have to cherish it, and I have to see the bigness of it, and I have to love it again, and love it again. And as I do that, then it crystallizes in me, that becomes quite natural in me, if it was the right thing. It becomes quite natural in me. But then, it is individual to me. Then, I would explain it already differently than it has been explained to me. Then it means for me already something different than it has meant to the other one. Because when it comes to the point of soul as soul, it is already a seed in itself. It has its own Christ and its own fruit and its own expression and its own form and its own explanation and everything itself, though it is the same thing. And that's what I feel we must realize in the order of the days, you see, that we are in danger as long as we think that when I see, we say so clearly, when I see something clearly, that we don't mistake it with the tone of soul, of an identified vision, which is so identified that it has become me. Because if we leave it at that, at saying, well, that's clear as daylight, we leave it at the point of mind. And if we don't take it in and nurture it and love it and love it until it grows in oneself and has its own form and its own seed and its own outline and color and form, it hasn't reached the point of soul. You see, that's why I feel we want to be very clear about what we want to attain with these talks now. I have given many sorts of talks and for different purposes. Let's see the purpose of what I want to achieve in these talks. Every other talk has another purpose. It is not to give you a nice picture of a chapter of the textbook. I try to give as much daylight as I can. But I would like that even if you say, oh yes, that's clear as daylight. Oh yes, I have seen that. Oh yes, that's quite clear. Oh yes, it's quite natural. That one is aware that this is only the point of minor soul. And then comes the birth. The birth is a question, as you said, it begins with moments and goes on through years. What I would like then is that you take that and ponder it. Go back to the text and ponder it. And ponder it. And ponder it. And love it. And see the bigness of the vision. See the bigness of the promise. The enormous promise that is set. And then one loves it when one sees the bigness of the promise. And as one loves it, something happens. Something grows in one. And as it grows in one, it can't sense that there is something foreign in us. And it out in us something which is foreign to our true nature. And I come to the third point where I feel, oh well, something has changed with me. Oh, I feel quite different. Then that's the point of reformation.